Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed, everybody. This is Garnet Lee here. Got a great show for you. The two Jeffs just flew back from Vegas specifically to come right here and do the show today.
That's true.
Wait, where are we?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were in Vegas earlier today.
Oh, that's right.
Couple of gambling fools.
It's all a giant blur.
That'd be Jeff Cannata.
That's right.
Two N's, one T.
Very true. Very excited to be here and also to say that we have another double jump coming. If you didn't get to see Double Jump last time, or if you did and want to see it again, we got new guests. It's going to be awesome. April 28th, midnight. We did turn away a fair number of people last time, so get your tickets early.
Yeah, I didn't get in.
Yeah. You can come this time.
Sad.
You're
going
to be on the list this time. Don't
Yay!
Worry.
Yay!
Tap A, tap and hold A again. Double Jump.
That's right. Double Jump. Do it up.
Sweet.
It's at the UCB Theater, I should say.
And that's April 28th.
Midnight.
Tickets already up?
Tickets are available and selling fast, so get yours now. Do it. You can
awesome.
Find the link if you follow me on the Twitters.
End of the table is Indie Jeff Mattis.
How's it going?
So both of these guys were in Vegas for Namco's Gamer Day, which they will be regaling us with some of the highlights from the keynote, although some of the other information will be embargoed until next week.
But true.
We have some information coming from that, including a little talk about why Ni No Kuni might be delayed until next year.
Yeah.
Interesting. And the lovely Miss Andrea Renee from Machinima is here.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be back, as always.
Sporting a stylish chapeau.
Yes, I'm wearing a hat today, which if you
She's
watch the behind the scenes video, you will see. I didn't want to wash my hair. Let's just be honest, okay?
She brought her hattitude.
Her hattitude. Nice. Yeah. And she was at PAX East.
I was.
Lucky.
And yeah. I got to meet some Weekend Confirmed fans at PAX East. Actually, Chris and Chris. So if they're listening, tell them hello.
Wait, Chris and Chris?
Yes, they were both named Chris.
What up, Chris?
All
Chris?
Of our listeners wow. actually are named Chris. It's a little known fact. This is a podcast specifically for Chris.
So while none of us actually went to Rome for Captivate, we've got information on the stuff out of Captivate. I'm anxious to talk about Resident Evil 6. If you watched the pre-show video, you know that I'm going to have to attempt to tutor my compatriots here on the show on why they should be excited about Resident Evil 6 after that video as well.
Yeah, make some sense of it, man.
I'm open to some tutoring because I think that I'm ready to revisit this franchise that I have put my blinders up on. Like, I'm just like, I see Resident Evil and I just cruise right past it.
So we got that. I played some Fez because it's out and you want to play Fez.
Yes, Fez looks cool.
And what else we have? We got some little bit of news stuff and we have some stuff from you guys. So we'll launch right into it and I'm going to start right off into the Capcom stuff because I want to talk about Resident Evil 6 because I'm excited.
Yeah.
You know why I'm excited is because after all of the detouring away from Umbrella stuff in 4 and 5, I feel like they're at least wrapping things back around nicely finally. So the whole idea of the game has been that there were these bioweapons developed, right, by the Umbrella Corporation, which got out of control. And then through 4 and 5, terrorists started getting a hold of them, much though not like in the real world, we're afraid that terrorists will get a hold of nuclear materials and set off a bomb. In the Resident Evil world, we're afraid that terrorists will get a hold of one of the viruses and use that to hold, you know, some society, some nation hostage. And in 6, the new virus is the C virus. Because, I don't know, we've had T and G, and now we're on the C.
Yeah.
And if you watch this latest video, the C-virus evidently allows a state where the zombified creatures can, like, go into, like, a sort of crystalline butterfly sort of thing and it becomes, like, an alien egg pod, and then they hatch.
Cocoons hatching zombies.
Yeah, exactly. Cocoons hatching zombies.
Babies having babies.
And you've got all kinds of cool things. So we already saw the president being zombified and Leon having to deal with that. On the other side of the world is where Chris is going to be chasing the terrorists who have been using the C-virus to China, where he runs into Sherry Birkin, which is fucking awesome. And this is where I lost them, folks. This is where they're like
glazed looks all around. Yeah.
I think it's cool, Garnet, that the thing that gets you so excited about this is storyline. I think that's cool because the thing that has gotten me excited about Resident Evils in the past has never been storyline. Well, I dig the story when it happens, but what really gets me jazzed is the mechanics that I'm dealing with and the moment to moment chills and thrills.
Okay, so we will come to that. But I think part of what made Resident Evil unique is that it was batshit crazy and just stupid fun narrative that was so unhinged that you could just be, okay, this is ridiculous and it's awesome and fun, right?
Yeah,
Sherry Birkin goes back to Resident Evil 2, which I think, you know, that's the one I struggle with. Like, usually I'm like, Code Veronica was best, but 2 was also really, really awesome.
2 is the first one I played back in the day. And
how much of 2 did you play?
The whole thing. I played it as a group in my...
So do you remember Sherry Birkin?
My buddies. Of course.
Okay, so so tell us your memory of Sherry Birkin.
Well, Sherry Birkin is the Sherry that comes... She's at the end of the game, right?
Well,
she comes in at the end.
Claire finds her in the chief's office where she's hiding because she had gone to the police station but found it already infested. And she's like running around through the like air shafts and stuff hiding in the police station.
Right. Right. You have a better memory of that than I do. That is clear. Because I remember her coming in at the end, but I do not remember the details.
Well, so you almost talk her into coming with you and she's being chased, but she doesn't realize she's being chased by her dad, who's been already mutated. Who's after her for the, you're doing it again. They start looking at me like, you are fucking nuts.
I'm glad you have such a great memory of this.
Right, there's
story,
just a lot of complicated characters and storylines.
At the end of it all, she escapes, right?
Yes.
And we didn't ever know what happens to her. So it turns out that what has happened to her is that she's gotten involved in, prevention of bioterrorism with bioweapons, and she's on a security detail protecting none other than Wesker's son in China.
Little Wesker,
whose blood is very valuable.
This is true.
Which is the whole foo is that Wesker has special blood because his blood is resistant to the viruses that these are all. They're doing it again.
They're doing it again.
I just think it's great that you have all that. You've used up valuable brain space.
If you look up convoluted storyline, that's why
6 could be awesome because it's back to all of that convoluted like core viral material.
You said viral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not like
pun
on Facebook.
Intended, right?
Not like Facebook. Although a Facebook Resident Evil tie-in game where you were infecting people with different viruses would be pretty cool.
Don't give them any
ideas.
Did you get
C? I'll trade you C for blue.
Dude, I'm going to mutate into a tyrant.
No.
I am going to mutate into a tyrant right here in front of you. All right. So the lore looks cool.
But
now I'll give you over to the action part, which is that
that's what
already,
I'm excited
okay,
about.
So they already shown that, you know, just like in 5, there's quite Rock Band Blitz. Andrea's like, let's talk about Rock Band Blitz, yo.
Interesting segue.
No, that was for later. You just announced it too early.
Oh. Sorry. So they're obviously it's still an action game, although reading through all the previews that were out there, people were definitely talking about how, at least for an action game, they seem to be a little more deft with the pacing and understanding that, hey, if I do downtime, if I have quiet spots and dark spots, there's a lot of times, you know, that you just get creeped out by walking around. But it's still like run and gun, move and shoot.
Move and shoot?
Yes. Move and shoot. I know. People get upset about that. One of the things I love, like, the forums, because like Gaff is all a Twitter about, like, well, it better have laser sighting because I don't want to see that damn crosshair on the screen, which is kind of true. It does sort of break the immersion. I'm kind of agreeing with them about that one.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of agreeing about that one. And then they turned the herb thing into just like, well, you get herbs, you make them into a tablet, and you pop a tablet with a button on the controller.
Kind of defeats the purpose.
It's awfully streamlined.
Yeah,
it's awfully streamlined and awfully action sounding. But you guys are excited about it. You would rather play that game. Because you loved 5.
I loved 5. But I loved 5 primarily because I played through the whole thing co-op, and it was such a blast playing. I was sitting on a couch. I was doing couch co-op, playing through, you know, each of us scaring the other, worrying about the other. Oh, my God. I got to do this thing over on this side
of
the map.
What did you get scared by?
Being close to death?
Yeah, chicken. That game scared you? A man.
I don't mean scared in the way that like Resident
said.
Evil 2 was a little scary.
My face was more saying there wasn't anything scary about Resident Evil 5.
Right. No, I'm agreeing with you,
right.
But it was thrilling in that same kind of I'm close to death. Oh, I got to stay alive.
There's definitely tense parts.
Yeah. Yeah. And they did wonderful moments of separating each player from each other and you feeling helpless while the other one, you're relying on the other one or vice versa. And I'm hoping that some of those qualities return in this one.
Well, it appears that they have things neatly set up into pairs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I didn't read in reading all of it. I'm not remembering at the moment whether or not anyone talked about co-op, but I can't imagine that they took that part out because it looks like it's set up with pairs in all three scenarios, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if you'll get to play Wesker Jr.
Hmm.
That would be a crazy idea.
That would be crazy.
So anyway, they moved up the date to October. I'm excited about it.
It's an interesting movie. You don't ever, almost never see that. Moving up a date.
You know what else game that happened with last year? Brink. Remember how they moved that up? And then it was broken.
And we all know how that turned out, yeah.
So let's hope that they can get everything done.
I don't project that this game will be broken. I mean, it's on MT Framework. They know that engine inside and out in that developing house. And I think that they know how important it is. They have obviously been crunching their asses off on the game. You know, judging by the way that video looks and the way it was received at Captivate, I think they're in good shape with the game. It looks like they're in good shape. Oh, and Mercenaries mode is back. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
So you want your co-op, there you go. Like, go comp stomp. That'll be fun.
Yeah. The milieu isn't quite as gripping, I think, as 5 was, but that sort of African, I know there was a lot of controversy when it came out, but that...
Really, the president being turned into a zombie?
Yeah, I guess that's cool.
And you have to shoot him?
Yeah.
That part of the thing starts with Leon, you know, putting a hole in the president's head.
Yeah. And that's a really cool concept, sure.
Yeah. That's kind of messed up. And then Europe and then China.
Yeah. You're right. I take that back. You're right. You've convinced me. I just...
If only it was always that easy.
I was going to say, that was pretty simple.
Okay, I got away with that one. Anything else? Are you guys... Am I making a point at all with Resident Evil? Can I get you a little more excited about it?
Will you promise me
that we'll play co-op and then I will play with you?
Sure.
Right.
I'd love to play co-op.
What I saw from the trailer that they released was... an all CG, all story based trailer, which is never really the thing that gets me thrilled about games. Because I didn't see any point where I'm doing anything. I liked it when I see a trailer that gets me really jazzed. It's because I see something that I'm going to get to do. You know?
Yeah, I follow what you're saying because you're in that for the like playing of the moment thing.
Sure,
it really is weird that you weren't more into Dark Souls than you turned out to be. It really does seem like a game you would really have appreciated.
I think it just hit at the wrong time. That I wasn't
able... look how into it Ryan was.
I know. And I envy that.
You could go back to the PC version.
I could.
So what did you learn about the PC version?
Well, it's very unclear as to what we're able to say and not able to say.
Yeah, it's called Prepare to Die Edition, I guess. That's one piece of information we can reveal.
Yeah.
And
Prepare to Die.
And, yeah.
There's certain things about it being on the PC that I would have assumed would be the case that aren't the case. And so
Kids, what he means is either it does or does not have controller and or mouse and keyboard, but I'm not really sure which one he means because I didn't ask him ahead of the show.
it's very, very, very much a port.
Yes.
I'll say that.
Well, that's not a bad thing.
Not necessarily.
That's not necessarily a bad thing.
But not... I think this is going to make a lot of people happy, and I think...
So rumor was there's two new bosses added to it.
More than that.
So there's more than that added to it. That's awesome.
But not a definitive number.
Right.
And resolution-wise, visuals-wise, did it look like it was kicked up for PC? Well.
Yeah.
So if you didn't have a chance to play it because you didn't have a console and you have a PC, you'll at least be able to play it.
That is...
And there's that to look forward to.
That is exactly... You've nailed the head of the nail.
And if you haven't moved over to Dark Souls already, you really should, because they are finally, once and for all, shutting down the Demon's Souls servers here in a couple of weeks. So, you know, or go back. If you wanted to go back and relive those moments, now's the time. Your clock is really, really ticking because it's going to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to shut down. Okay, the other game that they showed off at Captivate that caught some attention was a all action video for Lost Planet 3.
Mm.
So I guess it's not really that surprising that they're making a third Lost Planet game.
Is it? Because I thought Lost Planet 2 kind of didn't meet expectations.
Oh, it didn't. Well, my expectations.
The original Lost Planet only did like a million units, right?
Well, that's not bad.
No, it's not bad, but I mean, like if Lost Planet 2 didn't do that or better, do you guys know what the sales were for that?
So there's been some numbers that have been bumped around, mm-hmm. but keep in mind that there was a lot of reasons that may or may not have gone into getting Lost Planet 2 some sales, but it does seem like it sold well enough, and it does make sense. It also has some popularity in Japan as well,
yeah.
which is odd for that sort of third-person action shooter game. So I think that it made sense that they were going forward with it. Now, what's a little weird to me, and you know, I'm not the first person to come up with this, is that they outsourced it, and they outsourced it to Spark Unlimited. And Spark Unlimited did Turning Point, Fall of Liberty, and Legendary. That was the game that was, prior to that, Legendary, The Box.
Right.
Are they Are they better at doing companion AI?
Because you played Legendary The Box. Dude,
well, I mean, Jesus. It's like Capcom constantly shits the bed with co-op AI. They make these multiplayer-focused games, right? Like Lost Planet 2 and Operation Raccoon City.
Don't worry about that. Lost Planet 3, not multiplayer-focused, not co-op-focused.
What?
It's a whole new direction for the series.
That,
so
that is the most exciting thing I've heard about that.
That actually could be really great. Far. That actually could be really great.
You guys are more excited about this than... I'm fucking leaving. You're more excited about this than you are about Resident Evil. It's like you guys are perking up like, oh shit, that could be awesome. Lost Planet 3, fuck yeah.
Well, I mean, look at the two cinematic, like CG trailers that came from Captivate for those two games, right? Lost Planet 3 and Resident Evil 6. Mm-hmm. As someone who is not like super familiar with either of those two stories, as like a... hey, what's this game kind of a viewer, Lost Planet 3 looks cooler because Resident Evil 6 has so many moving parts and so many intricate story details that if you haven't been playing all the previous Resident Evils, you're not going to get as excited about that trailer because you're like, who is this person and who is that person and what is this thing?
Well, but yeah, on the flip side, at least in Lost Planet 2, there was, like, you were playing as a bunch of faceless, nameless dudes. Like, now you're playing as so-and-so and you don't even know, like, really,
so
there's no attachment.
Okay, so Jeff, I'll give you the thumbnail of Lost Planet 3. The thumbnail of Lost Planet 3 is a prequel set several years in the earlier history of the planet. And matter of fact, before the entire Nevek thing went sideways, while they're still not bad guys, and they're good guys, because Nevek is fighting the ice pirates it all sounds so ridiculous.
The ice pirates.
Yeah. Snow pirates? I think they were actually snow pirates. Anyway.
As long as they're not butt pirates,
we're
good.
Did you guys ever see Ice Pirates?
Wow.
I really liked that movie, Ice Pirates.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. It's Dave's fault.
Space herpes.
It's Dave's fault because he brought the fireball.
The views... Andrea Renee.
That's the one thing I remember from that.
Space herpes.
So those may or may not be in the game. We don't know.
All right, this is declined. Anyway, so
jokes. Please don't leave threads on NeoGAF about this.
It goes back to
too late.
Earlier in the history, what is the name of that planet? Ein 3 or some nonsense like that. And you're working for Nevek, and you're slowly uncovering that, hey, shit's gone sideways. And are arcanoids or arachnoids or whatever they are. The stupid things that live inside the planet that are wiping you out all the time. Or you're basically fighting them from inside a giant mech.
Yeah, I think arcanoids are like paddles that hit.
Yes, they allow you to break
they
out.
They are, sorry. Yes, no, they okay. are. So the video that Andrea says she likes, to me, was like super generic. It's dude inside like a sci-fi metal corridor being chased by a bug who barely makes it out of the sci-fi corridor in time to like tumble down the side of a mountain, run over to his mech, hop up in his mech, get attacked by a bigger giant bug, beat the crap out of that, and then, oh my God, shit, it's the fan, here comes a giant ice storm, and scene.
Okay, so it's in the snow again.
Yes, it's in the snow again.
Wait a minute. You did that trailer no justice at all.
The mech
he got into was super cool and it had a giant, like, turny claw thing on it. And he ripped the arm off of the ice bug, which you call it. And it was, like, squirting guts everywhere. It was cool. You just downplayed it.
That was thermal goo.
It was whatever kind of goo it was. At least it was like spurting goo.
I will say that.
Wait, don't say anything.
I didn't say a damn thing.
Damage done.
My excitement is based on the fact that it sounds like they're trying to right the ship from what was what to me was a disappointment into. It was exactly what Jeff said, which is this sort of nameless, faceless pack mentality that it really felt like. It was just all a skin for this sort of meta multiplayer game where you're supposed to outfit your guy and customize your guy and do all that stuff, which ended up not being particularly fun for me. And I know a lot of people had a good time with it, but I didn't. And it felt like there was no single player mode that was story driven and had a really interesting kind of series of awesome moments. It just felt like, oh, I'm just playing an offline mode of this multiplayer game. And to think that they are then taking this in a different direction and really kind of creating a more story-driven
Well, they're going in
game.
Classic.
I think that's cool.
At least from, so they did an interview with Official PlayStation Magazine, and in the interview, the game director talked about, and interesting, they have a game director from Capcom feeding the direction of the game into Spark Unlimited, who's building it here in LA, actually. They're out in Sherman Oaks.
Oh.
So basically the idea is story focused with hub areas in which you can have a variety of adventures that spoke out from there. And this also allows them to do stuff like mech customization.
See, they have a very cool environment. They have a very cool, I mean, mechs are cool. The sort of grappling hook getting around stuff is cool. I think that space, alien, snow planet look, I think is a, it's very cool and engaging.
It's
and
like Starship Troopers on an ice planet with mechs.
And I, all that stuff I think could be, make for a great game.
The other thing that the Official PlayStation Magazine interview brings in is that they also have a definite Dead Space sort of element that comes in when you're on foot. So there's also like some creepy creature conflicts where you like go down into
TM.
Where you like go into like caves or whatever or tight spaces and you're on foot. And now you're like when you're on foot, tight spaces, scary situations, fighting off bugs on that scale, get back to your mech. Get into the big scale and fight giant monsters in your mech.
That sounds like a neat recipe.
Could be good.
Customizable mechs, now lots of different storylines and NPCs. So you guys, okay. I stand corrected. Be excited about it then. You guys, I love it. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right.
I think I'm always looking forward to
And some of it for me is just being interested in it. But, you know, when thinking back to the last game, like this game sounds like so much better of a direction for them to go with. You know, mechanically and
well, I think part of the reason that you guys and I think and I don't think we're I don't think that this voicing is alone is that Lost Planet 2 was very definitely also designed to be played cooperatively. And if you didn't play it co-op, then you really missed out on the boat, unfortunately.
But I did play it co-op
and you didn't like it?
And I still didn't have a good time.
Really?
I really didn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it was one of my most anticipated games that year. I thought for sure it was going to be the game that for me would give me what people love about Monster Hunter. That's what I thought it was going to be. Because all the stuff leading up to it was like gigantic, amazing monsters that you have to take down in groups of you know, in co-op. And you have to use your friends and you can get around the environment in really interesting ways. I was like, oh yeah, that's what people love about Monster Hunter. I just never got into it. Maybe this is the game that'll get me into it because it's sci-fi and it's more of a shooter and I think maybe more accessible to me. And it just really wasn't very fun.
Hmm. That's interesting, because I think maybe the Western version of like the Monster Hunter vibe is more of what people hooked up on with Borderlands.
Hmm. That's interesting of you to say, and I think that's probably very, very accurate.
Because it has that same sort of like go back and play appeal, but it's,
right.
it's
but
a
it's
little
at a
more
higher pace.
Higher pace, but yeah. it's a little more loot driven and less notorious mob driven.
Right.
But you, like, so you're spamming through a bunch of guys. Like one thing you pointed out about Borderlands 2 was there was a lot of guys to wade through when you played it.
Yeah.
Do you have this? Because Andrew got to play it at PAX East as well.
I did.
Did you have the same
it.
Experience?
Where I had to
like waiting, like it just felt like you were wading through a lot of dudes.
Well, I was waiting through a lot of
stuff
loot.
To pick up.
There was lots of loot for sure, but I love that they changed the mechanic where you can automatically pick up money and ammo, where you don't have to like look at the ground and hit pick up. The pickup button.
That's fixed.
It automatically just like it like sucks into you and like you just automatically pick it up. So you just run over to the stack of money and bullets and you automatically pick them up. You don't have to like hit a button.
So how do they do the loot sharing if you're in a group?
But guns and like shield upgrades or grenade upgrades, you have to physically hit the button to pick them up. So you can still look at all the specs. You can like look at them, like look down at them, and then the specs come up. You can say, oh, do I want this gun? Do I not want it?
Mm-hmm.
And you can go up to your teammates and hit a trade button. So instead of you having to go into your inventory menu and actually having to physically hit drop, and then your other person has to come over and pick it up, you can just go and look at your teammate and hit the trade button, and then you can choose which gun to pass to them.
Which character did you play?
I played both. I did two different playthroughs. I did one as the Siren and one as the Gunzerker, the two classes they had playable at PAX.
And
I really loved what they did with the Siren, with the new phase lock where she lifts, like it locks them in like a bubble. I hate to use stasis bubble from Mass Effect, but it's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And it locks the enemies in there. And depending on how you have the phase lock leveled up, it does different things. It can give you health. It can give your teammates health. It can do damage to the enemy that's in lock. It can do a variety of things. They have added an extensive amount of skills to the skill tree system. And the way they have it laid out is much cleaner. And I like the menu system a lot better. And the Gunzerker with the dual wielding, I talked to some other people who really loved it, but I didn't. I don't know. I just didn't get into it. And I don't know why, but I felt it difficult because, like, when you have two different kinds of guns, like, let's say you have a rocket launcher in one hand and, like, an assault rifle in another hand, learning how to use the triggers.
The fliggers?
Yes. I'm slurring my words already. This is not good. No, learning how to use the triggers. That's the way you say it. I found really challenging. And obviously, there's a learning curve to those special talents for each class, depending on, you know, which one you choose to go with.
Let me hold you there for just one second. Jeff, you loved double wielding because you were telling me yesterday you were freaking loving it with the dual rocket launchers. What's your counterpoint to Andrea's, you know, juggling controls, picking it up thing?
Well, I see what she's saying, and I also agree in the sense that it feels a little less like a superpower than some of the other mm-hmm. people. Like, having a stasis field really feels like a different, very different superpower. And this is, I'm already shooting stuff. This lets me shoot stuff slightly differently, you know, faster and with different weapons all at the same time. Mm-hmm. But I'm already sort of doing that. Right. So I can see how it might not be for everybody, but I just loved the mix and match ability with the guns and how different they all felt. And then being able to just lock that into. So, you know, usually if you have a rocket launcher that loads really slow, you're screwed. Once you shoot one shot, either right. you're going to switch to a different weapon really quickly or wait while that reloads takes forever. And here I could shoot off a rocket launcher and be jamming on my assault rifle or whatever it is, or sniper rifle, whatever, something very powerful that reloads very slowly, and I could still be dealing a lot of damage with that other hand.
How much of a time advantage does that give you from, like, just what you would normally do, which is hit the hotkey, swap out?
Well, I mean, it lets you to cycle through the reload on the rocket launcher, or unload in two gigantic assault rifles at the same time. You know, you can really mix and match and find the sweet spot.
Say hello.
Yeah,
to
if
my
you
new
were
friend.
Yeah, if you were dual wielding SMGs, it could be pretty powerful if you had some really high level SMGs because, like, it would be like a lead rainstorm. You know,
just a bullet storm, maybe.
Yes. Well, you know, I didn't want to use that term since that's the name of a game, but yes, it'd be a bullet storm. So it'd be cool.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to see what the other two characters' abilities are. And I didn't extensively look through the skill tree for the Gunzerker ability. Maybe some of the higher skills that you unlock with with Salvador's power make it a little bit cooler and give it more of a fun factor. But, I mean, I loved Lilith in the first game, and I'm definitely going to be doing my first playthrough with Maya for sure.
Cool. It's funny you should bring up Bulletstorm because that game was a lot of fun, but it turns out it's not going to get a sequel.
I know.
That's a bummer, yeah.
When we come back on the other side of this break, why don't we pick that up because Crysis is getting a third game.
Very happy.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that and more when We Can Confirm continues. We Can Confirm is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from We Can Confirm in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. Hey, you know, there's one thing you learn when you're publishing a blog, and that is that live button, it actually makes things show up on your site. Unlike whoever unfortunately clicked the make live button on Crysis 3 for Origin.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
You can't really pull that back. And once Google goes across it and puts it out there, you're kind of done. And I thought it was pretty funny. EA's quote that they gave to The Verge was something like, "Well, you just can't keep the best kept secret in shooters." I'm like, it's really not the best kept secret if you published it on your own publishing company or your own digital storefront.
Yeah, exactly. Crysis 2 was a fantastic shooter, and it's no surprise to me that Crysis 3 is coming. But, I mean, I did think it was interesting. It wasn't just a post. It was like a full, like, screenshot.
Well, it's the box cover
concept art, whatever
concept
you
art
want to call
of it,
it
which is nano suit guy with a bow.
A bow.
A high-tech bow. It's got like a box on the front. I'm expecting, you know, he's probably like Bowen Luke Duke. It's got like some dynamite charged arrows that he's gonna like, yeah. You know.
I always wanted that episode to happen and it never did.
I don't know, man.
I was waiting for that episode.
A high-tech bow and arrow seems incredibly inefficient when you've got a badass suit like that.
It's kind of ridiculous. I mean, you know, I'm glad you said it.
They're gonna give him a sling too and like, you know, a spear.
Pointed stick.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll have a high tech point. That would be awesome. He's got like the carbon fiber nano stick. I will poke your eye out right now. Okay.
Upgradable, of course.
Of course, upgradable. There's like multi tree. There's a whole tree. Like, do you upgrade the shaft or the point?
Oh, I'm gonna leave that one alone.
Both
that's
at once.
What she
I think
said.
people are, you know, always asking us for Kanata Fords, and I think Crysis 2 is a fantastic recommendation. Because
I was about to take Andrea to task also for blanketing Crysis 2, because I think there's a divided house on that.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
I think maybe multiplayer wise there is,
oh,
but
definitely multiplayer.
Single player
oh,
yeah. is one of the best shooters of last year.
Well, it's one of the best looking games on the
Yeah,
console,
it was completely undersold. And I speak exclusively about the campaign because I did not spend very much time in multiplayer at all. But I mean, like you said, it was beautiful. I remember seeing that at GDC the year before, last year, in 3D, and it was one of the first 3D games I ever saw. And it was like, it blew my mind how gorgeous
However,
it was.
However,
I should play that on my new TV.
Yes, you should.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize it was three dizzles.
Mm-hmm.
Three dizzles. Yeah. However, looking at the progression of that series, Far Cry really was beloved for its adaptive AI, running around the island, going wherever you wanted to, watching how shit happened. Crysis 1, same thing, but with a nano suit in the jungle. Mm-hmm. Crysis 2, much more linear, and you're in New York City. And it was there
it wasn't
were parts
that much more linear. I mean,
it was,
it,
a lot
was
more linear.
It was, but I mean,
there were definitely
the encounters,
parts of it that were broken.
Yeah,
it was more linear. I shouldn't say it wasn't more linear, but it was the encounters were still sandboxy. They were still like, you know, figure out a way to take down these guys.
Yeah,
in
it was like a big contained.
Yeah,
you know,
but I think the difference is they were sandboxy instead of sandbox.
Right.
And for a lot of folks, that was disappointing. I mean, let's
and
be
a lot
honest.
Of folks,
like,
I think
there
probably
plenty
made it more accessible. Because I think the first Far Cry is a little daunting when you're just there on the island. You don't know where to go next, and you don't know what to do next. And
yeah, you swim up on the beach, and the first few moments are like,
yeah,
okay, I know I go forward somewhere, but
right,
yeah,
which was kind of awesome.
Yeah,
I think Far Cry 2 is a much better game than Far Cry 1.
I'm
my
saying,
opinion, but and it also it felt a little more directed than the first game.
Interesting. So do you like of Far Cry? Crysis 2, which one of those is your favorite? And where do you put Far Cry 2 out of that group?
Far Cry 2, I'm tempted to say Far Cry 2 is my favorite of those four.
Which isn't Crytek!
I know.
I didn't ask you that question, Jacanata.
You did not. But Crysis 2 is my favorite of those three.
Okay.
I liked Far Cry. I liked the first Far Cry. I felt like it just wasn't. It felt like too much of the same thing too often for my taste. I didn't feel like it went anywhere particularly interesting for me.
So what do you think about the direction they're going with 3 then?
Well, they haven't really said what they're doing with 3.
Well, they showed some trailers and stuff.
The
where
trailers
like,
are awesome.
Far Cry? Oh, you're talking about Far Cry.
Yeah, yeah,
you guys are like confusing the hell out of me. Sorry, you're jumping gears.
Go ahead. Talk about Crysis.
Crysis 3 is what we were talking about.
Yes.
Which we have nothing else to talk about, but what I wanted
other than the title exists.
And what I wanted to entertain was... And I guess Crysis 3 or Far Cry 3 is a good comparator. Do you want it to be more along the lines of Crysis 2, or do you want it to be more sandboxy? I would say that, to my mind, if I'm looking at EA's lineup now, they're back in this situation of shooter, shooter, shooter. I mean, obviously, though they don't have a announced Battlefield title in production, they have a significant amount of resources put against Battlefield just to maintain content delivery for the current game, and they must be working on the next one. They've got Medal of Honor Warfighter underway, which we know that they're very engaged on that. Mm-hmm. So now they're going to support a third top-tier AAA shooter. Are they going to go... I think that it would be really cool to get back to, and I'm using the air quotes, but to get back to like super high-end engine, amazing experience for PC, and the definitive sandbox shooter instead of, well, we're going to put you into another story-driven, campaign-based game.
Well, you want that to be Crysis 3? You want that game to be Crysis 3?
Yeah, because the thing that was cool about Crysis 1 was you had this high-tech suit, but the thing that's cool about the suit is the more open environment you give me to fuck with it in, the more ways I'm able to figure out what the hell I can do with it and do something stupid.
I just felt like they refined that by making it more focused in 2, in that I still had the freedom and the creativity to use the suit how I wanted to, and I could still take down the enemies in a manner of my own choosing, and with that sort of, there's no one, I'm not walking down a corridor shooting guys. It's not Medal of Honor, you know, or Call of Duty. It really felt like I walk out into a plateau and I see an open battlefield, and how am I going to handle that? But those are linked by more directed, focused, story-based kind of, why am I in this next place makes more sense. Jeff,
I think two. Well, here's the thing. I agree with you, Garnett. I would love to see it open up into a huge sandbox, true, you know, hardcore PC thing. I think the calculation that they've made is that they're cutting out a portion of their audience by doing that.
Oh, I know that. I know that is.
And the reach just isn't. So the gamer in me wants it. I mean, I just don't think they'd be able to hit enough people with it to make
it. And again, back to it. Look, the name of the company is Crytek. Crysis is their headline game for CryEngine, which they're selling to people. So as the flagship engine, you know that they want to make sure that it looks freaking fantastic on 360 and PS3. Because for license purposes, that's where they're going to get a lot of traction. That having been said, look, I mean, Crysis 2 looks great on PC. It's just that I think that there is a legitimate argument there that a lot of the work that went into the changes that were made was done consciously to make it more console friendly.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no doubt about that.
And they don't, and I just think that they could maybe examine that, and they certainly don't need to go any further down that road.
Right.
And they could consider coming back a step from that and being, you know, hey, let's make, you know, a really, really badass PC shooter that's fantastic.
I certainly wouldn't want them to go farther down that road and make it more directed and linear. I think Crysis 2 had a really great mixture of the two. And yeah, retreating from that could be a little interesting and opening it up a fair bit, but the places you get to go in Crysis 2, what happens and what you get to see is so awesome, and only possible because you move from location to location rather than sort of being on an island and exploring it and going wherever you want to go. You sort of by nature can't take the place to new levels in the way that you can in a more directed experience.
All right, so then to what degree do you think multiplayer is important? And this also probably applies to Lost Planet 3, which though they did not say anything more, they did say that, look, Lost Planet 3 will still have multiplayer in it. That's an important thing. We're just not saying what it is yet. So both these games, you know, getting to, again, compete in the online space, particularly in console, increasingly difficult. We saw this week where the 343 guys announced some of the changes that they're going to be making in Halo 4 for the online.
Right.
And that's certainly controversial.
Yeah.
Certainly controversial. Randomizing spawn points, letting you choose your loadout at the beginning of it. You know, there's obviously a lot of discussion taking place amongst players in there. And again, it's shaping up this fall to be Halo, inevitable Call of Duty. What else is going to get? What else can even fight against those two alone?
Medal of Honor?
Yeah, Medal of Honor is going to have multiplayer, but I think it's going to be really tough. Battlefield has definitely re-solidified its position. Yeah. The move to have rentable servers on console for Battlefield is obviously them trying to give themselves something that's a really distinguishing selling point for that.
And they're pushing out DLC pretty late in the year.
Yeah.
I mean, considering that game came out last year.
So where does that leave Crysis and, you know, eventually maybe Lost Planet 3 as well?
I don't think Crysis 3 is going to be a fall release. I think it'll probably be an early 2013 release.
They're both early 2013, I guess.
So I don't necessarily think that they're going to be competing. I think maybe those, I mean, obviously the Call of Duty community is active regardless
right
of what
now.
Else is coming out. You know what I mean? Like, so they're, I don't even know if they can even be entered into the equation because it's like, people that play Call of Duty actively play no matter what else is coming out at the time. Like, they just play all the time.
Halo players are like that too.
Halo is the same too, I'm interested, though, to see how the Halo community reacts to the changes in Halo 4, because I know that from a lot of the hardcore Halo players that I've spoken to, a lot of them didn't really gravitate to the multiplayer in Reach. So they didn't like the changes that were made and some of the new things that were introduced. Like, most of the original Halo crowd still sticks with Halo 3. At least from the people that I've talked to.
Yeah, and power-ups on armor is a potentially big, big changing point as well. Mm-hmm. Because that was one thing Bungie was always adamant about was the, you know, we'll do cosmetic stuff, but we're not going to do things that'll change the balance, the basic balance equation of the game.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of respect that goes out. I mean, I remember, and I, obviously I haven't played Halo in a good while, but I remember part of the fun in Halo was that there was a relatively limited set of things you were trying to get in any game space, whether it was, you know, the rocket, let's just say just the rocket launcher. You know, you're trying to get to the rocket launcher. You know where it is. You know how you got to go to get to it. And there is that sort of tournament mentality within mm-hmm. those spaces.
Right. It's like the race to see who gets there first.
Yeah. And the more you add in customizing elements, the more challenging it becomes to keep all those balance pieces in order, maybe.
Well, yeah. No, it definitely doesn't. It becomes also the issue that a lot of multiplayer games have is that the people who have the luxury to play many hours a week or even hours a day end up getting the far better upgrades, because certain people that, you know, have full-time jobs or have a family or have other commitments that can't play for 30, 40 hours a week just don't have the time to build up those experience points or, you know, to buy the unlocks. So that's why I think it's good that a lot of times that multiplayers that only have cosmetic upgrades, you kind of see who the best of the best are, because they didn't buy their way into like an overpowered character.
And not to go too far afield, but I'm interested by how this latest drop for two maps onto Elite goes, because two maps hit Elite on 360 for premium members, and it not only did Activision not put any fanfare behind them, but the maps are sort of, they're okay. Like, Sanctuary is really cool. It's in a monastery. It's high up on these sandstone cliff things. And there's, like, some catwalks. And there's some cool, like, interior spaces. But the other one, and the name of it is, I didn't even write down because I wasn't going to talk about this, but the name of it's already flown out of my head, is just, like, it's a concrete plant. It's pretty generic.
This is, I'm glad you brought this up.
Foundation.
I think that
Foundation.
They might be kind of this whole idea of Elite and having these content drops consistently might be backfiring a little bit.
Sort of run you down.
Well, exactly. It's to the point where we've now had what, like six content drops for Elite mm-hmm. or something like that. It's like you get to the point where you're like, oh yeah, it's another one. Oh, I don't even know what the name of it is. And it's getting to the point now where you're like, do I even care about what's new? You know what
right.
I mean?
So the weird
Instead
thing
of
is
making
like,
it an event, you know?
Exactly. And like the proposition was, okay, so I'm buying Modern Warfare and I'm a Modern Warfare player and I'm going to pay for this up front and get all this stuff. And you're like, oh yeah, of course, that makes sense. But then eventually it's like I've been at you guys were in Vegas. It's like I've been at the buffet for 2 hours now and I could go back for another dessert. And I'm like, man, screw it. I don't want another dessert.
I would go back for another dessert.
Jeff would. I can attest to that.
I would too.
So, you know, you keep going back. And you're like, yeah, I've been through this. And then maybe they need to do more than, and I think that they probably, as they evolve the idea of Elite, will probably continue to evolve the idea. But it's maybe got to be more than just map packs.
See,
and
I think that the core players love that.
Like, yeah. Like, yo, I think you're right on the core player. You're 100% right on the core player.
That's probably one of like two, or maybe that's the only game they play, because they play it constantly every day. And yeah, you're somebody that plays a handful of games every week is probably not going to be as excited about being bombarded with
for the core player, and even for the person who's just, you know, like following along with the pro players and the pro leagues and keeping up with like what's hot, what are the COD strategies? Can I go play this in the maps when I play with my team? Or maybe you're like in a clan even and playing on a regular basis. I get that, mm-hmm. but that's still. I mean, it's a big player base, but it's not the big Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
Right, exactly. And I think that, you know, what I meant, you know, just to elaborate on, you know, kind of backfiring or shooting themselves on the foot, is that we're still like pretty fresh for Elite. It started in January and now it's, you know, just, you know, mid April. But I think by like June and July, I mean, people are going to be exhausted from listening to their press releases.
The content calendar is still ridiculous.
Yeah. It's like by that time, you'll be like, I don't care about this game anymore, because now you're thinking forward onto what's the next game. What's the next Call of Duty going to be?
But all that having been said, you do get a whole lot of stuff for your money with Elite.
Oh, no, you absolutely do. It's totally like, I think for people who are really into Call of Duty, it's definitely a bargain deal, like for as far as DLC goes. But I just don't know about their method. Yeah. I don't know if doing these multiple drops per month was maybe the right way to go from a PR standpoint. I mean, for people getting access to content constantly, yeah, it's great. But I don't know. I'm growing weary of all the announcements, I think, is just my problem.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is they didn't make a big deal out of it this time. So there is a little bit of a change there. I think there's going to settle in now to, yeah, we know that we're talking to the Modern Warfare community and they're tuned in with us, but it's not a big deal anymore. I don't know. All right. So what else did you guys pick up on while you were in Vegas? Complete change of direction. I want to know what they told you was the reasoning that Ni No Kuni is going to be 2013 before it comes out in North American version.
Very sad because the game is
It's gorgeous. Oh, yeah, it looked gorgeous it looks, 2 years ago at TGS.
Yeah, and it looks like a very special experience. It's the kind of Japanese role-playing game that we don't get very often anymore, very traditional in a lot of ways, but a story that is not your average plug-and-play fantasy story or even your average plug-and-play Japanese role-playing game story. It really has that Studio Ghibli look and feel. That it looks like it has heart. It actually has something to say.
Yeah. And it's very, very consistent visually. Like the in-game visuals are, they mimic the cinematics. There's no disjointed, now I'm watching a cinematic. Now I'm watching. It's like everything's very, very just. It's
yeah. I've never seen a game that looks more like I'm playing an animated film. I mean, we've seen cel shading. We've seen a lot of techniques used to sort of mimic that. I've never seen anything look as authentic as this does.
So
it's special. They were taking a lot of care in localization, mm-hmm. which we want. We want that to be the case.
Okay.
We're sad, obviously. I would love to play it this year, too. But
what kind of care are we talking when it's over 12 months from Japanese release to Western release?
The game looks good enough that it's one of those rare instances where when it comes out, I'll play it. And it doesn't really. I mean, yeah, it's kind of ridiculous that it's taking that long.
No, I would scratch the kind out of there. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And I think that here's where I'm coming from, in that I'm playing Yakuza 4 right now. And this series is one of those series that had a very rough road with its Western adaptations. And I see some parallel here between the original Yakuza and Ni No Kuni, in that the original Yakuza was this, this great elaborate game, and when Sega decided to bring it over, they dropped serious money and effort into the localization for North America. They bought high power Hollywood name voice actors to do the voice work. They went over the localization, with a fine tooth comb to make sure that everything was precisely in place the way they wanted it to be and really well arranged. And the North American version came out after Yakuza 2 was already out in Japan. Mm-hmm. It took them so long. And then they were from there always behind the eight ball. They were always so far behind on it, didn't know what to do with it. They never recovered their money because they had spent so much money localizing it. And at the end of the day, part of what was really amazing about the experience, which is I am fully admitting to this as a mea culpa, I am loving Yakuza 4 for its Japanese voice work, because it just, reading subtitles is not a big deal mm-hmm. at all. And the atmosphere and delivery and immersion in the experience of Yakuza 4 is so much better for me.
That game is so steeped in Japanese culture that, you want that.
And Ni No Kuni is going to be really similar. Look, I mean,
but you're a minority case.
Come on. The average person isn't going to walk in and buy Ni No Kuni anyway. Are they going to rename it? Because if they're not going to rename it, that right off the bat is going to be like...
Right. I agree with you, Garnet. No, there is a kind of barrier of entry for the American audience, for sure.
They
can sell it on the back of Miyazaki. But that already is a niche.
And that's already a niche. Yeah. And I'm going to guess, though I have not heard it myself, that the voice work in the Japanese version is probably very strong.
Well, it sounded like the voice work here was pretty strong too. Yeah.
But all of that work is what's slowing it down. And having all the translations back and forth and everybody approve them.
It may be a strategic decision to sort of get it out of the scrum of fall. That may have something to do with it.
How does the scrum apply to this title? What's it up against? That would be a competitor for it.
White noise of other games. Just tons of other games. I'm totally pulling that out of my ass.
It's complete and just needs to be subtitled.
Yeah, there is going to be more stuff. They weren't clear on what that would be, but there's going to be more stuff.
And there again, I just say that's also pissing money away.
Well, if you're asking,
I feel like they're pissing money away and will turn around afterwards and be, oh, well, it wasn't successful. We didn't recoup our investment. Well, why the hell did you invest like this in it? It's not the right way to approach it.
But you're arguing against doing it with care and
No, I'm not saying with care. It should be done with care. It should definitely be done with care. I'm saying that what they're doing as additional steps doesn't make sense.
Well, but you don't know. You don't know what that process is taking. And I
putting
would say
English voice work to it just to me doesn't make sense.
You say just put it out with Japanese and subtitles.
Put it out with Japanese and subtitles. It'll be beautiful.
And if you ask me, like, which would I prefer, that's the way I'd prefer. But I still know plenty of people that I'm like, you know, hey, go see such and such foreign film. They're like, oh, that's one of the where you have to read.
I mean, you have
a direct. Even with voice work, this game is not going to be any different because it's never going to be a 200,000 copy seller.
But you have a direct comparison between what they do for the Studio Ghibli movies. Mm-hmm. Disney takes them and puts Will Arnett and
Disney
Amy Poehler.
Takes them.
Well, what the fuck is the difference of the fact that it's Disney or Namco Bandai? You know,
brand on an animated film gets it into power theaters, enough screens
but
across the United States.
You can throw the Disney brand on an animated film that has subtitles and Japanese voices, and it ain't going to do the same thing. Wait.
What you said was, what's the difference? And the difference is that a movie with the Disney name evokes all of those Disney animated films. I don't know, what's Namco's reputation?
No, Tales series,
which is also hardcore Japanese RPG.
We're sort of talking at cross purposes. Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh no! Go ahead and illustrate your point. Because
what I'm trying to say is that in the same way that Disney is investing in taking these films that could be off-putting to an American audience not familiar with Japanese iconography, mm-hmm. and putting recognizable American names on them. Now here, not necessarily recognizable, but at least it's a little more palatable to an audience unfamiliar with that kind of thing. I think in the same way Disney is recognizes the need to do that in a series of films that look very similar to how this game looks. I think Namco is going, well, yeah, we may not ever get a million sales out of this, but we can at least make the game more palatable to a US audience that might not
Here's where I would say the difference is that the Disney name on a film and putting those artists behind it and just the very nature of a movie only being a couple hours long makes it much more digestible in the first place. And then Disney gets it on on the screens that they get it on. And you know, the movie business is very driven by what theaters are you in,
sure.
and how many box office and yet that opening box office. So they time it in the right spot, get it on enough screens, put the Disney name behind it as an animated film, and it's going to be a lot more successful. I don't think that there's much difference in what Ni No Kuni is going to do today with subtitles and beautiful music and a great Miyazaki milieu than what it's going to do in 2013 with whomever does the voice acting, no matter how great the voice acting is.
I just think it seems bizarre to me that you're arguing for impatience and...
It's not impatience.
Yes, you are. You're saying just put it out now, as is, who cares? And I'm saying
I think
it's
pretty
awesome.
That's not what I'm saying. You're putting a ton of words in my mouth.
Okay, so what are you saying?
I'm not saying it's impatience. I'm saying that it has been my experience that these publishers put this money behind the games, and then when it doesn't work, they use it as an excuse for not doing other games of the sort. And it's because this is why Atlus has been successful, is because Atlus is willing to come into these games and realize that, hey, you know what, this is what this game can do. This is, you know, it might not be something that Sony's interested in picking up, but we can take this, translate it, put subtitles on it, market it to the core audience that's going to buy it, and they'll be happy with it.
So you're saying don't spend the extra money because you'll just get disappointed if you do? That's what you're saying?
I'm saying don't spend the extra money because you're spending it for an audience that isn't there regardless of what you do.
Isn't it more of an issue of time than money, though, for localization like that? Like, it can't be
It's expensive.
Well, yeah, but
studio,
I mean,
studio time and all the back and forth on the scripts and everything else, it's expensive.
No, but I agree with you, Garnet. I'm on your side here in the fact that I think that the Western audience, particularly the American audience, is not going to necessarily give this game a try just because it has American or English speaking voices on it instead of subtitles. I think the people who want this game and who are excited about this game and who want to play this game would love it just as much if it was, you know, in Japanese with subtitles than if it was dubbed in English.
I don't get this. This is not that much of a niche title. This is an animated game that looks so beautiful.
That's an interesting perspective.
It looks like a Saturday morning cartoon in a lot of ways. Yes, it has anime stylings and that Miyazaki look, but you could easily market this as a very
it's way more accessible than something like Final Fantasy, just from a fiction perspective.
And there was an era when Japanese role-playing games were king of the hill, and this the playing of this game is very much a traditional Japanese role-playing game with some more action-y elements in the combat. So,
well, who do you think is the audience for this game, though? I mean, like, from that you mentioned a cartoon and the narrative. Who do you think is the determined audience for this game?
RPG fans.
I mean, like, more specifically, like, not just RPG fans. Is it, like, kids, like, 6 to 10? Is it adults, like, 30 plus? Is it teens? Like, what's the audience for the game?
I get the sense that, you know, 12-year-old kid could get a lot out of this game and have a lot of fun with it. And me, 38, I could get a lot out of this game, too. I don't... It's one of those sort of... It's like, you know, you watch a Disney movie and it's like kids love them and adults love them. And
it's like saying who is the audience for Spirited Away?
Right.
You know, that it's clearly an animated children's fairy tale, but it's also something that adults are going to get something out of. I mean, it has that same appeal. And yes, it requires a little bit of appreciation of the role-playing game tropes. You know, you're still playing a role-playing game and wandering around in an over map and having a little beast come up to you and then zooming in and fighting it on a small... So there's still those, but those games used to be huge. Those games used to be the preeminent console role-playing game.
But that was before Angry Birds, you know? Like, I mean, the games market today is different than it was when the JRPGs were the king of the hill.
I would say the used-to-be argument is pretty tough.
I think this is such a beautiful piece of art that it looks to me like, and I'm so excited about playing it, that I applaud Namco for ponying up and trying to bet on the fact that people will appreciate it.
And are you going to applaud for them when they tell you that they're not going to do any more games like that because it failed?
That's a little bit of a negative Nancy talk.
It happens. It's happened a bunch of times. It's a track
record. I don't disagree. But I have faith. I have faith in the audience, guys out there. Buy Ni No Kuni when it comes out in 2013.
I agree. I think it looks fantastic, but... Riddle me this. How on earth do you try and market Ni No Kuni in
Wrath of the White Witch?
Yes. Yep. No, the Wrath of the White Witch are all words that I can understand. I know what wrath means.
No.
I know what White Witch could probably be.
I'm talking to Andrea. She doesn't understand, no.
Oh, okay, okay.
All right. Well, we'll let you explain to her during the break. And when we come back on the other side, we will dip into alternate reality hipster Dante in Devil Makes Me Cry. Beats laying the bump for us as we go into the second half of Weekend Confirmed. All right, so also coming out of Captivate was the latest of hipster Dante, who is now described as, now I love how the evolution of this. Thank you, NeoGAF, for putting together the progression of explanations that they've given for why they've screwed up Devil May Cry. The latest is that it's a alternate universe.
Yay, that's never bad.
I know.
It's just a dream.
That's not a lazy narrative.
Never.
All.
So I'm going to assume that you guys haven't seen the trailer, probably. Have any of you seen the trailer?
I was in Vegas.
So it's a shirtless young Dante hipster dude laying in his trailer, wakes up in the morning, demon attack, shit goes sideways, he goes flying through the trailer, flies into his shirt, which falls over him naturally right into place.
Classic Dante.
And then he's on like a sort of midway boardwalk with like a big Ferris wheel fighting demons.
That's
and then
cool.
They showed a little bit of game mechanic, and then some of the folks who were Captivate got to play it as well. And I'll say this, it does at least appear that Ninja Theory is trying to get the air juggle combo system that's in, you know, that's like sort of the trademark feel of Devil May Cry in the game. And that makes me at least a little bit happier. It concerns me that it's Ninja Theory. Mm-hmm. I mean, I loved Enslaved.
Yes.
But I think Enslaved was much more in...
Heavenly Sword's a good game.
Heavenly Sword is a game. You are correct. It is definitely a
good game. It's a good game.
Heavenly Sword is an Unreal Engine.
The combat system is fun.
It's an Unreal Engine game. You're right. It's definitely an Unreal Engine game.
It's the combat system is not bad in that game. It's not.
It's just not like fantastic.
Exactly.
It's not fantastic. That's a great way to put it. It's like, not fantastic.
Did I say it's a fantastic game? I said it's a good game.
Devil May Cry should be better than a good game for a combat game.
Well, you loved Enslaved.
And Enslaved isn't a combat game. As a matter of fact, I think as we talked about, like Enslaved
it's not
its strong suit. Even exploring wasn't really, because it did all the glowy ledges thing. But what was cool about it was as an overall experience, you had the adventure, you had the action, and then you had the story. And all three pieces sort of held their own on an even playing field to create, you know, something that was more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, Devil May Cry is known for the combat. Like, that's kind of like the standout flagship icon of the series.
Yeah.
Is like this crazy, fast, cool combat.
Oh, does anybody know the fiction for Devil May Cry? Like, can go into that? Because that's probably super convoluted too, right?
Shut up. Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
You were bitching
about my favorite one.
What's your favorite one?
Number one. That's the best one.
Oh, I've been playing the HD collection a little, and it's funny that the combat has become so iconic, as you say, and so specific in what, as you say, the juggling is so specifically...
Oh, yeah. It's all about air combat.
But the first one really wasn't that. It wasn't what it has become.
Well, the novelty of the first... So I remember the first one because I remember the year that they had the demo... at E3 for it, and my friend Kynan Pearson and I were there, and we stood in line and then stood in line and played it again and then stood in line and played it again, because it, like, the first time you got the whole double bladed, like, juggle them up in the air and then keep them juggle, like, switch to your pistols and keep air juggling them by keeping them in the air with your pistols, and then realize you could jump
right
and then hit them again while they're in the air. I was like,
yeah,
oh my god, this is amazing.
But it was sort of a baby step. It has gone so far beyond what it started out with. And that's not, I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
And
but
you pointed to 3 as the pinnacle. I mean, yeah. 4 was a good game. See,
I really liked 4.
Oh, really?
I really liked 4. I had a great time with 4.
So I was about to say that 4 was the problem, but and that 4 was a good game. And it concerns me that this looks like it could be a good game. And I'm sort of like, I'm torn, because number one, that Dante is not Dante. I'm sorry. It's just, and like the whole reaching for, oh, here's the latest explanation du jour.
Yeah.
That bugs me. That does bug me.
But again, like this is probably just me, but the fiction is so, like, again, it's so freaking out there that, like, you could, I mean, with something like that, you can reboot it and people are going to be like, all right, whatever. Can I juggle dudes?
Yeah.
You know?
But here's where I'm really torn is that, so what if this game is successful? Then do I have to have more sequels of this? It's Devil May Cry. I want my Devil May Cry back. And I get that, like, they wanted to refresh. It's really, I understand that's a challenge, because you think, oh, well, you know, we've done Dante shit. We've done 4 Dante games. Like, do we really go, was Devil May Cry strong enough that for an action combat game, we're going to go back for Devil May Cry 5? I understand that's a tough call. And then they turned to Ninja Theory, which, I mean, this is another weird thing, is that now you've got Ninja Theory making core... Devil May Cry game. You've got Spark making core Lost Planet game.
Right.
I mean, Capcom really is back to this, like really following take next steps of this whole, like, we're going to give core franchise pieces to Western developers. It hasn't gone so well for me. I mean,
they kind of have no choice at this point, because they're becoming less and less relevant, I feel, with the
Capcom?
Western audiences every year. Yeah.
Would they have been better calling it something else?
Well, that's another great discussion. I mean,
Lucifer May Weep.
Would we even be talking about it if it was called something else?
If it looked cool and you weren't like, oh man, they fucked up Dante. Like,
maybe,
you know what I mean? Like if you're like, oh wow, this looks kind of badass, and yeah, the main character listens to Linkin Park or whatever emo shit he does, but
they could have called it Inferno's Dante.
Yeah.
I don't know where you're going with it.
No, but I just mean, like, I haven't seen enough of the game to really know how excited, and because I'm only peripherally familiar with the other Devil May Cry games, I just wonder.
Play 1, don't play 2. 3 is awesome. 4 is good.
Okay.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I think 3 is the best one. But it's interesting how it becomes more and more an action game over the over the steps.
Well, one is the only one that really had the holdover from the original design ideas of making it more exploratory. And as you said, you're remembering, and it is funny to go back to think that, like, when you change perspective, because it's fixed perspective in each scene,
like Resident Evil
that,
style,
that you have to like your controls move because now your controls are pushing your character the wrong direction.
Right.
I hate to do this, but can one of you guys like summarize the plot of each game in like one or two sentences?
I can't.
That's what I mean is like, so it's about the juggling. It's about the combat, right?
Yes.
You know, it's not about like, oh, I wonder what happens to Dante next. You know, I wonder if he'll...
But that's what my argument for Resident Evil was,
right,
too.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So...
I
can't name a Capcom property that isn't like that.
Yeah.
I would never
claim...
It's
not about what happens to Mega Man. It's not about what happens to Ryu. You know, like...
Yeah.
Dino Crisis.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Yeah.
Killed by Dino Crisis 3, Dinos in Space.
This is a company that grew out of the arcades, and that's fine, and that's great. And a lot of these properties are vestigial remains of the arcades, yes. And that's not bad either. But it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm attached to their narrative, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Word.
So I guess I don't care as much as you do about the purity of Dante and his look.
Well, I mean, I find myself thinking about this now because the Resident Evil narrative and story is much more important to me than Devil May Cry. And obviously they don't nearly hold the same stature for me. And then, so if that's all true, then why should I get so caught up in which Dante is Dante?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
It sounds
just
sad when
ride.
You say it.
Just let it ride.
Can he juggle? I mean, yeah.
Can he juggle a lot of dudes?
He's got swords and pistols.
Swords and pistols, juggling time.
That's all that matters, yeah. Right?
Does he have to look so much, though, like he should be in, like, the latest CW vampire sitcom?
I mean, I think that's the greater point. It's not that he looks different than what you expect. It's that what he got changed to is not
to your taste. He doesn't look like a badass anymore, you mean?
It's not to your taste.
Every day I'm juggling. That's what it boils down to.
Devil May Cry.
All right, then. It does sort of boil down to that. Hey, so we hit Dark Souls. We hit Ni No Kuni. And then you guys got to see a video of Star Trek, which was my surprise of E3 last year.
In 3Dizzles, we got to see
it. Yeah. 3D Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yep, 3Ds.
And they made a whole big deal about how NVIDIA was on hand to deliver technology that was unprecedented.
And asynchronous co-op.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, so supposedly the 3D that we saw... has never been done. It was two different views of 3D at the same time on two different screens, but it doesn't seem to be that hard. But I guess it was. I guess it was really hard. But
no, it looked great. I mean,
it was what now?
Good.
So we're watching two people play the game at the same time.
Yes.
In co-op.
Okay.
On two different screens.
Okay.
And each of them was 3D, showing two different things.
So basically, like, you get one.
So they
own, side's Kirk, one side's Spock, and you're looking at both.
So they each had their own point of view.
Yeah. I don't know why that's difficult to do, but they made a big deal about the fact that it was. So I'll just point that out, and we can move on.
Yeah.
But yes,
well, Captain, you must understand.
On. And they coined this asynchronous co-op idea, which is something that sounds awesome and is awesome, but is not new.
Right.
It's been done a lot by a lot of people.
Well, is it actually asynchronous?
Not asynchronous. I mean asymmetrical.
Asymmetrical. Yeah, I think I said asynchronous first. No, it's not asynchronous.
Okay. Asymmetrical.
Yeah, you play it. Yeah, you imagine.
Asynchronous co-op would be awesome.
For a shooter? Yeah, you're like, oh.
It's your move
in
Star Trek.
Yeah. Jeff pulls trigger. Your turn.
No, asymmetrical, meaning that you are both playing the game from different characters' perspectives, and those characters are doing things in a different way.
Oh, so it's co-op.
So it's the kind of co-op that most people play.
Rad.
But I mean, we're being snarky, but it did look very good.
Yeah, it did look very good.
Very good.
Yep.
Do you like games such as Mass Effect, Gears of War,
Uncharted?
Then you will love the Star Trek. Have you enjoyed films such as the Star Trek? And the Star Trek 2.
The Rat of Khan.
Yeah. You guys are pretty funny.
You will enjoy this game. It has a lot of familiar looking things, but it also has some really cool stuff. Some new, you know.
Yeah. a lot more info is going to come out of E3.
Yeah,
is basically.
But you get to use a tricorder, so that's cool.
Sweet.
And yep. You get to. We saw Spock do some Spocky type stuff.
Yeah, a little mind meld action.
A little mind meld. Control a. Turn a bad guy good with a mind
meld.
I'm
glad
because that's how mind meld works, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is. No.
No.
What? But, you know, whatever. Mind meld lets me, like, sort of see your memories, right, from Star Trek. You know Star Trek, right, Garnet? Your guys are glazing over, like, when you talked about Resident Evil. But in the game, mind meld means that they.
It's not working!
That's the neck pinch.
That's the neck pinch. It's very different.
You
I did this
see,
first.
See, but yeah, Garnet was molesting Mr. Kanata in
was.
The studio.
That's why he's smiling.
My neck is higher than that. Anyway.
What the fuck has happened to Jeff over the last year or so, by the way?
Like, you've
this guy used
me.
To be completely different, and now he's just like, oh, I'm going low-hanging fruit? Hell yeah, I'm grabbing him.
Garnet has made me grab everything that hangs low. Anywho,
not touching that.
So Star Trek looked really good. It looked really good. It looks really good.
Yeah, there's like a segment at the beginning where Kirk and Spock are both flying at the Enterprise, like through space. You know,
with like personal.
I'm
like,
glad they stuck to co-op
thing.
I'm glad they stuck to their guns on co-op because it does concern me that we talk about games. Look, we were talking about Lost Planet 2 earlier, and that game was all about co-op. And it is still incredibly difficult to get mainstream players playing co-op, even though tons of people will play Modern Warfare all the time. Trying to get them just to play a little bit of online cooperative play is a much bigger challenge.
And the really cool thing here, too, is that, you know, you have a game like Gears of War, and you have Marcus and Dom, and, you know, okay. But you've got really well-defined characters of Kirk and Spock, and they represent very different things. Kirk is brash, you know, ball-busting, punch-you-in-the-face dude, and Spock is logical, you know, think-about-things-first guy.
And they're really playing up the whole notion that, you know, you want to play through the game twice, basically. Like, the experiences will be different. Like, you'll see certain things from each character's perspective that will give a different spin to the events. I don't know.
You got to really be into Star Trek to do that, because I got to tell you, that's pretty unrealistic.
Well, no, I think that more just means that they're going to, I mean, this is speculation, but that they're going to somehow split the narrative at certain points where, so you're off in one area and your buddy's off in another area and then you meet up. And so you're seeing different parts of,
you know, like co-op games do.
Yeah.
This time it's asymmetrical.
yeah. That's like it. Yeah.
Brutal. I'm telling you, it's brutal.
Yeah.
Which is funny that we should bring this up, though, because I played a little more Gears of War 3 co-op over the weekend. And it is still really weird going back to that game, how slow it feels. It feels so slow.
I played
slow.
A little of that game again as well last week because I have my new 3Dizzle TV.
Yeah.
3Dizzle Tizzle. And, I was sad at how much it has to give up to do 3D in that engine, but.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Drop in fidelity?
It feels like they stopped doing anti-aliasing. It seems like it's a little.
What makes you think that it feels slow? Like, do you have anything specific?
I think that the combination of your standard run speed and then having to switch to roadie run, even just the standard run speed, and maybe it's also enhanced by all of the armor that you're wearing and the way you move and the way the animation is, you feel like a bipedal elephant. It's like boom, 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 boom. It's always
like
cool. That.
Right? I love the feeling of weight and mass in that game.
Yeah, but maybe that's intentional, but you don't have the agility that you do in other shooters, and so it gets to the point where you're like, you do kind of feel like you're steering a brick.
Hmm. Or, you know, the other thing that was really pissing us off is that. They're really, really, really freaking annoying with arsenal management in that, look, it's Gears. You want a Lancer. You don't want a Retro Lancer. Retro Lancer don't have a chainsaw.
Right, exactly.
Got a bayonet.
I don't want a fucking bayonet.
The bayonet's hard to steer, though. Like, when you do the Lancer move, when you rev up your chainsaw, like, you will chainsaw someone in half. If you retro charge someone, you have to be good with it, and you have to be practiced with your aim. Otherwise, you just charge next to them. Hmm. And you're like, sweet, I just charged next to you instead of into you.
It's like, look, when I'm playing Gears, I want one of my weapons all the time to be the Lancer. I don't want to be running around not getting enough ammo for it. I don't want to be not having my Lancer. I don't want you to tell me, oh, look, we just like started act two of section three. We changed your weapons out for you. Even though you just had a Lancer, it's gone now. I want my Lancer. That's all I'm saying. I want
my
Lancer.
You like the Gorgon pistol? I like that one. The
Gorgon pistol's fine. It's fine. Actually, what I really want is I want a Lancer in one hand and a long shot in the other, and I could give a damn.
I agree that their arsenal management system needs a little work, particularly with the campaign.
Let me play the game and have fun with it.
Yeah, I got frustrated that they wouldn't let you change out weapons, whatever weapon you wanted. You could only change out a specific weapon for a specific type of weapon. You couldn't just pick, like, so they're like, there's 12 guns in the campaign. You can pick which three of those guns you want to take with you at any time. That's not the way it works. You can only pick one of three for this type, or one of two, or one of three for this type, or, you know, that, yeah, to me, I didn't like.
Slot. But, yeah. But you bring up a broader point, Garnet. Can we put a moratorium game industry on the idea of, I just got all the weapons that I want, and now I finished the level and I started the new level and I got the crap ass weapon that I did not want, and I took so much care in getting my load. Can we have a moment in between levels where the guy goes, hey, I really think you should start this level with this thing or something, and I should have a
choice.
You
might want a sniper rifle for this, and you're like, you know what, actually, no, I want my flamethrower. I like my flamethrower. I'm keeping the flamethrower.
I'm good with the four weapons that I found that I meticulously, congregated together.
Right. Can I bring up one other point? And that's Gears of War is another game in the future, that uses a freaking bow. There's a bow in it.
But it's a badass bow. Come on.
It is a badass bow, but really, couldn't you just make something that fired that?
It's the torque bow.
That might be my favorite weapon in the whole game.
The torque bow.
Yeah, but it doesn't make any logical sense, though.
Don't you take that
away. Why does it not make any logical sense? Because it's a bow with torque.
Right, but it shouldn't be a bow. It should be at least a crossbow at the very least.
Something. Or a sling. It should be a sling.
It should be a crossbow.
Okay, I realize now the absurdity of what I just said. Let me lay that down.
Right. Bows make absolutely no sense.
But crossbows.
They have a trigger. I did not articulate myself properly there. It should be an automatic thing. You shouldn't have to, charge it up.
You give that thing to Katniss, and she's like,
Katniss.
The fuck is this?
Sigh.
No, mechanically neat, narratively. Come on, really? You're going into Gears of War. If you were actually in Gears of War, if that was real, you would want one of those bows.
But bow worked pretty good for Rambo.
You just wait. Wait until Avengers, the Avengers movie happens, and you see Hawkeye with bows, and you're going to be like, bows.
Oh, no, I'm all about, I like Green Arrow, too.
Well, Crisis 3's got a bow.
Exactly. Bows have been around, but we're at a technological advancement far beyond bows today.
Yeah, if you're a ninja or I don't know, man.
If you're a ninja.
I'm defending bows.
That's what Gears of War needs, a ninja.
I can see that the fireball has been effective. We've successfully digressed into bows.
Bow fight. It's on. I will see you at dawn, sir.
Bow flex.
Bows for both of us.
Anyway, the point was that that game is sort of is cotton candy shooter anyway. And for cotton candy shooter, I'd really like to be able to play it with the guns that I want to play and go in, just having a good time with it. Yeah. And that's where I think that game's at, right? And which reminds me that we didn't talk about Bulletstorm not getting the sequel that people can fly. They started to
one
work
of the
on
most
it.
Underrated games of the year. Was it last year that it came out?
No, it was 2010, wasn't it? Pretty sure.
It's such a great game.
No, and it was spring of last year.
Oh, it was.
Spring of last year.
Time flies.
The guy who kept saying, ugh, this
I never
the,
played
ugh,
it.
The tone of this.
What?
Before it came out, I was like, ugh, this game is going to be stupid.
You missed Garnet saying he never played Bulletstorm.
Well, there's a lot of games Garnet's never played.
Oh,
no surprise.
Snap.
No. But yeah, I thought the tone was going to be so off-putting.
That's how it is when you're finishing games. You actually have to put a little time into them.
Dude, I will go toe-to-toe with you finishing games. Just because you finished Final Fantasy 13 doesn't mean you now are Mr. Game Finisher guy.
That is an accomplishment.
It's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
Mr. Game Finisher guy.
I really admit I did not finish Final Fantasy 13. But Bulletstorm is tons of fun. It brings something fresh and interesting to the table. And I don't understand why people didn't buy it. I think it might have something to do with the tone. The tone.
Which
Well, it might have something to do with the crappy marketing.
You mean the frat boy sex toy tone?
And on paper, that's really it did sort of turn me off. And then you play it and you're like, okay, yeah, they're doing this the right way.
Right.
You're going to go this route and
genuinely
be
funny.
And it's
yeah, they were definitely poking a lot of fun at themselves, pun intended.
Sure, but the dick tits thing was very polarizing.
Well, the problem is they defined their game that way.
Yeah.
They came out of the gate and went, we're the dick tits game.
And it should have been the fun thing. Like, dick tits should have been like the stupid quip, not the identity of it.
Right. Because the identity of it is the really fun mechanics of playing in this gigantic over-the-top sandbox. And it's a blast. It's a blast. It's a really interesting, fresh take.
Well, and as the Shackers pointed out, one of the problems for the PC version was they tied themselves to Games for Windows Live, which was not a great system, doesn't have good support, and really did not make the PC version. I mean, here's a guy that
Dark Souls PC.
Here's a developer that had great credentials from the PC world as well, from Painkiller, and then they come here. It's this Game for Windows Live game. It's not even available in all regions around the country, around the world. It just wasn't executed on well. They got stuck with this dick tits motif for their general marketing, and they lost it. They lost it, and it really was obviously a game that resonated. A lot of people had a lot of fun with it.
So if you want to see Bulletstorm 2, the Return of Dick Tits, you must start an online petition.
Give us more dick tits. That's great. I'm glad we could help fuel this. Thank you so much. Epic is making a PC exclusive game. Anyone want to take any prognostication guesses on what they're going for with their PC exclusive game that's in development?
Have they said that it's an IP that we know already?
They didn't say anything else. Cliff just said. So all this stuff came out over PAX East. Like, one of the things that also came out was that the Gears of War Exile. Sorry, I can't say specifically it was the Kinect game, although everyone kind of knows it was the Kinect game, is dead. Mm-hmm. Not really upsetting. No one's upset about that, right?
No, not at all.
So we don't even need to talk about that. Gears Kinect. Goodbye. See you later. And Cliff said that. Let me repeat that. We are working on a PC game. Mike Capps said in an interview with Joystick afterwards that he could confirm it was exclusively for the PC, brand new game. Hmm. Thoughts?
I think it's a new IP, but it could be Unreal Tournament.
I don't see how you make Unreal Tournament and then not have a console.
I agree.
Like, there's got to be
free to play PC.
Yeah, maybe.
What game is more suited to the free to play marketplace than Unreal Tournament?
Yeah.
Almost ideally built to be a game that you give away and let people buy what they want to for costumes and any other kind of stuff, while keeping it like more, the more you play it, the more you get whatever the virtual currency is, because the more you play it, the more you tell your friends about it, the more excited you are about it. And then those people who want to dip in, they get brought in by you, they get brought in by their friend who plays all the time, who's getting rewarded for playing all the time. Yeah. They come in and are like, oh, that's really cool. I want to look like that. I'm going to buy the winged helm of the gods so that I look like that for 99 cents.
Hmm. Makes a lot of sense.
And it makes so much sense that if that's not what it is, somebody's probably like, ooh, you know what?
Oh, I'm sure they've thought of it. Who knows what it is? I just think I wouldn't be the least bit upset about Unreal Tournament going free to play and that being the game. I think that would be.
Do you think Unreal Tournament is a franchise that would rally a multiplayer community?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
If they did it right. Oh, yeah.
And what would doing it right be?
I think doing it right would be bringing back a couple of three classic. Like, you got to bring back two for it. Like, you just have to bring back that map, right?
Yeah. Do you want a couple of classic maps? Do you want the pace of the old game? Do you want that insane speed?
Absolutely. You've got to have that rocket launcher. Like, they have the rocket launcher. You got to have the flat cannon. You got to have the acid goo gun. And I mean, from there, you can mix in some other stuff, but you like lay down those basic foundations with good base weapons, a couple of classic maps and a couple of new maps, and launch it just like that, and then keep pushing content into it. Absolutely, dude.
What was the thing that made it go stale in the first place?
Loss of focus, maybe, and then vehicles
and all that crap that got put in.
They wanted to get bigger, so they did that. Then they did some. Actually, the console games were really cool. The console games where they brought in melee combat were really fun. It's just they kept doing other things to be competitive in those spaces. Plus, let's not overlook the fact that Epic is just a studio in North Carolina, and they got the Gears contract, which is awesome, and they have their engine to build, which has become a really big deal because they are the preeminent engine in the first-person arena. Yeah. And I think that it just became a matter of, well, we've done a bunch of Unreal stuff. We've done a bunch of tournament. You know, they pushed Unreal 2 out.
But it did go stale. I mean, the audience waned. You know, it's not like they just made a decision to stop updating that franchise. It went stale.
But where did the audience go? Because, I mean, there really hasn't been a shooter like that really captures that. Well, right. So, and that's the closest thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the bouncy jumping and the, right. you know, the weapons
the
that
speed,
are
speed, the you know,
and they move it around to other games as well. I mean, I think that you have folks who are playing games like Monday Night Combat that are like of that old sort of community like that, or Nexus. Like, yep. You know, they keep moving around, but a really strong, solid Unreal Tournament game, man, I think it would be a big time winner. And especially would really pull in the great PC world if they said, you know what, screw it. We're going hardcore old school, but approachable and free to play. Like, we're not going to mess around with the console.
And if they could do something like Air Mech's doing in Chrome or whatever, holy shit. I mean, I don't know.
What do you really think? I mean, I think that
I don't know
I think
do
for
that.
It to be Unreal Tournament, it has to be bleeding edge graphics.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it does.
But they're talking about, I mean, running it in Flash, right? I mean, that's like the... So
they're talking about running what in Flash?
Unreal.
Are you talking about the... Or the
yeah. But I mean, like, if that's all about... Like, they're
I don't think... I don't
want to
see a new Unreal Tournament running in Flash. I want to see a new balls out pushing the edge of what the visuals can do.
But if you're going to go free to play...
You can do that in free to play.
Well, you can, but
you're cutting out a huge sector of the audience who maybe
the reason
not
they
necessarily.
Go they get use free games is because they don't spend money on their PCs.
Not necessarily, right. Jeff. Not if the engine is really scalable, and that's something
okay.
that that's yeah. something
but
that
I mean,
is
that what you want out of? Is that what you want out of an Unreal game? Is it like the super scalable?
Scalability doesn't hurt me as a power user at
right.
all.
True.
Scalability just means that everybody can play it. I mean, look, you can go back to when people were playing Quake all the time and turned everything fucking off.
Yeah.
To get the maximum frame rate.
I remember those
right?
days.
So let me play it how I want to. Give me that adaptability. Make it really scalable, but make it really also gorgeous for people who have the high-end hardware.
Yeah.
I would play it.
I would, too.
I would, too. I wouldn't... I would also play it on a console, though.
Yeah.
Well, you don't get to. It's a PC game this time. All right, stick around. We'll come back and wrap this sucker up with a little more news. We'll talk a little Fez and, I don't know, whatever's not scratched off on the list. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with the last bit of Weekend Confirmed.
It's crazy.
We are the clock minders here as we come into the end stretch here because Jeff has a hard out. At
I do. Can I do my finishing move right now?
Sure.
So
here's
my
Jeff's finishing move. Finishing move. Dun,
finishing
dun, dun.
Moves. Because I probably won't get a chance to do it at the end. I want to mention the fact that I don't think we've even mentioned we are drinking Fireball cinnamon whiskey right now.
Delicious.
It's all the rage. I just discovered a couple weeks ago when I was not on the show.
Kids dig it.
I was up in Portland.
You should have it on Cheerios.
And it's where I first discovered, I guess it's all the rage now. I'm probably the last to know about it, but it's delish. It tastes like a hot tamale candy or like a Fireball candy. It's so
like Big
good.
Red.
But my girlfriend, while we were there, she decided to put some 7-Up in her Fireball, which we dubbed Fired Up. Say
nice.
Fireball with 7-Up, Fired
little
Up.
Little play on words there.
Little pun.
Yeah.
It is delicious, and I'm pretty sure we invented it. So everybody's firing it up right now.
Well, actually, I'm having a fire sprite.
God damn you, Garnet.
Yeah.
God damn you.
Or a Sprite ball.
But anyway,
you know,
we have
your
to think because the Fireball whiskey people sent us this whiskey, right? Yeah. Thank you at No LA Alex for sending it. It is.
Yes,
it is,
muchas gracias.
I bought some and it has a prominent place on my mantelpiece because my girlfriend and I really dig the firing it up. So
and it's got this cool like lizard fire breathing thing on the bottle.
Yeah,
what would you call that?
I would call that a demon.
A demon,
or
of some
if you
sort.
Like your fantasy games, you can always get a fire sprite.
God damn you, Garnet! Fired up. Try it; you will not be disappointed, right, guys? It's good, right?
Yeah. It's delicious. Right, yes,
so
thank you very much for sending it. I mean, if you wanted to send another one, you know,
or write directly to my house would be awesome.
Anywho.
Andrea, I have bad news for you. We have another one.
Oh.
We have another
well,
one.
Well, where is it? This one's empty.
It's for next time. It's for next time.
Dang
this
it.
This is we're exercising a little control. This is quality control in the show.
Okay.
Quality control in the show.
What are you trying to tell me?
I'm telling you. What are you trying to say? I'm protecting
myself.
I hear
myself. You speaking to me.
I'm protecting myself. I'm protecting myself. I'm protecting
I'm
myself.
I'm feeling unsafe right now. I'm feeling unsafe right now.
So speaking of time, Andrea,
she's
all excited.
Segue.
She got to play Super Time Force.
Yes, from Cappy. Super Time Force is an up-and-coming indie game. I spoke with them at PAX East, where I also got to get hands-on with
the game. Tell us about
the game. You mean up-and-coming or upcoming?
Upcoming.
Yeah.
Upcoming.
And up-and-coming.
Cool. Maybe it's up-and-coming.
Thank you for the grammatical fix. I appreciate that. In short, it's freaking awesome. It harkens
all right, so
back.
There you go. That's super
No, that's the short. No. They want to hear about this. Trust me. Yeah. It's it kind of harkens back to this retro thing that we've been seeing on and off, but they really kind of grasp the side scrolling, like platforming 2D, like 8-bit world with these little characters, and it's hard, like really, really challenging. We're seeing a lot of people.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Can you, since so 8-bit graphics, yes.
You would say that, right? Yeah.
Retro.
So for
retro,
folks, because this is an uncommon title, it's not as, you know, it's not like an immediate, AAA title everybody's heard of. Give them like a quick, like walk up to Super Time Force. What do they see on the screen?
You get three different characters to choose from at the beginning. You get a guy with a machine gun, a guy with like a sniper rifle, and then a guy with a shield.
Okay.
Like they're little, like knights or they're little like dudes, and then you're going across this world and you have to shoot all these enemies that are trying to shoot you, and then there's like fireballs coming down that you have to dodge, and literally if you take one hit from anything you die.
So am I seeing this top down or am I seeing it
it's
like
side scroll?
Yeah. Okay, so it's side scrolling.
Yes, and if you get hit once you die, and then you go back to the level, and when you start back at the beginning of the level or whatever save point you got to, the your ghost character of who died is with you, and you can see your ghost, like all the actions you did the first time. Your character will run out and do what you did, and you'll follow that ghost character.
Oh, that's really cool.
And then if you die again, both of those characters are on screen, and then it's like it like loops.
How many can it handle on screen at once?
At the demo, they could have as many as 30 on screen at one time.
Fuck me, you're kidding. That's awesome.
I'm not kidding.
So you could come up to an obstacle and like try different things out and die, and then as you came up next time, you could say, okay, so last time I jumped like right here and I couldn't hit there, so then maybe this time I could try
right,
going from...
Right, and all the weapons you fire will fire and hit the same enemies again.
Oh, they just live fire?
Yes.
So it automatically does everything you've done up to that point. You do not have to input a second time.
No.
You can choose at what point to leap in and start.
No, you're following.
No. You don't choose. It's automatic. So let's say
you're playing and all these ghosts are playing along with you.
With you, right. So if you go beyond the point where you died the first time, then they...
Oh, they're actually killing the enemies.
Right, like you did the first time. So like, let's say on your first playthrough, you killed enemy A and enemy B, but enemy C killed you. Then you go back to the beginning, and your ghost will come with and kill enemy A and B again. But you could also shoot them at the same time, because by then you figured out how to shoot them better or to kill them faster. But the enemies still take the same damage from your ghost character. It's really helpful in boss battles.
Oh, I bet.
I will say.
So that's really cool.
It seems really inspired by like the replay mode from Super Meat Boy.
Right.
You know, where you get like at the very when you finish a level, you get like 50 dudes all going through the except it's actually interactive. It's actually part of the gameplay.
Yeah.
Like you're actually they're contributing to your success.
Right. Very and you can cool. And if you die like in the middle of a level, like one of your ghost characters will have like a save. What happens if your ghost character dies because they don't get up to the point where you've passed? You can go back and save them, and then if you die again, you'll start from that save point instead of going all the way back to the beginning of the level. It's kind of difficult to describe until you actually play it, but it's really cool and it's really fun and it's super challenging. Like
think of all the really cool design layers you can factor in. Now you can basically do real asynchronous self co-op because you control what happens and then you come in behind yourself along with yourself.
Right. So you know what yourself is going to do.
Yeah. You already know what you did. And now you're coming in along with you to do more of it or to do the other side.
At one point I had like 8 or 9 ghosts on the screen with me at one time. And it was just like, it was almost a little like chaotic.
That's really
cool. Are the levels designed so as to prevent you from defeating them the first time, so that you literally sort of have to compose a series of layers in order to complete the level? Or
no, I don't think so.
It's just hard enough that it's just, chances are that's going to happen.
It's just so challenging that you're going to, it's going to happen. I mean, unless you're just like some kind of video game wizard. I mean, it's really challenging, because if you get hit by one of these peripheral fireballs that are coming across the screen from enemies in the distance, or if you get hit by fire from one of the enemies in front of you, literally all it takes is one shot to kill you. Or one side, you know,
which they
from
can
something.
Do in the game, because the death penalty is not that big a deal.
Right.
And does that mean that all the enemies are always doing exactly the same thing?
Or no, there's a bunch of different kinds of enemies. And
no,
the,
but I mean, are when
are
you
they running
through,
patterns?
Yeah. Is it pure pattern based, or does it respond to how you attack it?
They definitely, from the level I saw, they look like they were in set patterns. Mm-hmm. But the cool part is that there's like an arsenal of different guys that you can choose from. So like when you die, you don't have to be the same character that you were in that first playthrough. You can pick the sniper guy instead of the machine gun guy. Mm-hmm. So your sniper ghost can go through, but you're playing as the machine gun guy.
Just theoretically, you could take the... Theoretically, you could take the machine gun guy, go banzai, run through, blast as many people as you could, knowing mm-hmm. that eventually you're going to die. And then you could come along and take the sniper right after him and just kind of casually walk down and be like, oh, I missed that, but plink. Oh, there's another guy. But oh, yeah, I missed him. Plink.
Yeah, you could.
That's you could like lay down a baseline cool. of fire.
Yeah.
And then layer on top of that different
and each character has like a basic fire and then like a power-up fire. So like the sniper guy, he has like the one single shot, right? But then if you hold down the fire button before you release, you can actually fire that one shot like through a wall and hit the enemy on the other side.
Well, Cappy's genius.
Mm-hmm.
They just won the video games for today.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Really, really cool.
If you guys see it anywhere or see a demo or whatever, play it. It's not going to be out, I don't think, before the end of the year, based off what I've heard. It looks like 2013. But
Super Time Force.
I love that what's interesting about the indie game scene is that so often these games are... games that on their face of them look like things that are familiar from 20 years of gaming. You know? Like here's a side-scrolling action game. And yet, although we were making side-scrolling action games 20 years ago, oh, by the way, the hook on this thing is this completely crazy cool thing.
It's postmodern. They're postmodern video games, basically.
Well, but to your point, they're a lot of these indie games take a tried and true formula, and then they introduce a hook that is just so like, whoa, this is so
cool.
Where'd
you get
it? Like, how the, you know, awesome job, you know, like reinventing this genre in this way.
Which I think is why, you know, a couple of years ago, and granted, it's been in development for a long time, but we were excited about Fez when we first saw it because of this exact same sort of thing of, oh, yeah, I've seen this sort of adventure. Whoa, what the hell just happened? Mm-hmm. Because you turn the corner and all of a sudden you're like, wait, how did that happen? And what's interesting about Fez is that it, on any face of it, looks like a classic 2D Mario-esque sort of adventure game where you're jumping from platform to platform and climbing up ladders and moving levers and making jumps from, you know, one ledge to another and climbing up walls and all those sort of things that you do going indoors and finding little rooms and secrets and all those cool things. And the simple introduction of being able to turn that plane to one of the other three planes that in theory are parts of sides of a cube. But this is what I was trying to explain to Jeff earlier, is the thing that was disturbing me a little bit playing this game at first, and then I slowly started to get my head around, is that you have to look at Fez the same way you look at an Escher. Mm-hmm. Enjoy it. Enjoy it for what it is. Enjoy it for the perspective trick it plays. And don't go looking for the part where the perspective breaks. Because if you've ever taken an Escher and really looked at it, there are spots in it that are weaker where you go, oh, this is where that vanishing point doesn't flow to that vanishing point and it breaks it. And then you lose it and you're like, oh, it's not really so cool anymore. But when you just look at it, you're like, wow, this is really cool. It's a bunch of stair steps always leading up. And the same thing is happening with Fez. When you turn from side to side, it has a really cool effect of, oh, I'm looking at the left side of this same cube. Oh, now I'm coming around to the back side of it. And as long as you only assess it in that manner, then you're in great shape. It's when you start to apply volumetric cube 3D space to it mm-hmm. that it starts to break a little bit, because each of the faces does not lead into the same three-dimensional space. It leads into its own plane.
Yeah, so it's not Mario Galaxy.
It's not Mario Galaxy.
When Mario walks around a square planet, he's literally dealing, as you say, in a volumetric cube. And in here, you're on the face of a cube, but you stay on a 2D plane on that face of a cube.
And when you snap, turn it 90 degrees into space, you're just looking at another plane. And this was really bugging me at first, especially like probably going back to my like architectural background of like drawing plans and, you know, drawing blueprints and then making 3D models of them. This was really bothering me until I got to the point where I got to the world map. And the world map will either completely break your brain or the whole thing will come together, because the world map shows all of the places that you have been to, especially as you start to open up new ones, and where the worlds connect to one another. And then you get the then you start to realize that, oh, the lines are just going into a planar face of this world. They're not going into the world as a as if the world was a whole 3D space being pierced. They're coming off just a face of it. And it's really weird. It's really weird, because that allows them to connect all sorts of all sorts of crazy things. So very quickly, once you get past the beginning of it, the game as you're adventuring around is a pretty simple meme that really works with any sort of adventure game. You collect little bits of cubes to make big cubes, and enough big cubes, you can open new doors into new worlds. It's very like classic design, right? Again, back to that thing of here's a classic thing we've done before with like the neo-modern approach of completely wild turn on it. And it's really cool because it allows you to do, did you ever play Paper Mario?
Loved it.
So you remember how, same thing with Paper Mario, you had like in front of the paper and behind the paper sort of thing? So you have the same thing here in any plane, but then when you flip sides, you also have looking at it from a different side, that that slice could be completely different. So you could have an opening, that, it's really hard to explain without looking at it, but you could be inside an opening with an open that through which you could pass to the backside of a plane, but when you flip it, that is now nothing more than a 2D vertical slice,
right?
And you're in an entirely different plane, but it's opened left to right in a whole new way,
which is genius, because if you built the game volumetrically like you were talking about, none of that would work.
Exactly.
You know, it just it doesn't have that abstract element.
Exactly.
You would immediately know, okay, I know this 3D space, I can envision it in my head. There's that. When you make those turns, it's like, whoa, wait.
Yeah.
How do
And when
I,
you when you realize yeah. also now you can jump and wow. You can jump and grab the spin triggers, because the triggers flip the world, and you could jump in one plane, flip the plane in midair, and land in something entirely different.
And sometimes you have to do that.
And oftentimes you have to do that. And
it reminds me of this book that I read when I was like very young child,
by Madeline Engel.
Well, kind of. Is it, maybe am I confusing it? There's a book called The Girl with the Silver Eyes, and it was about this girl who figured out a way to move into the fourth dimension. And the way they would describe walking into the fourth dimension from the third dimension, it's basically in Fez, it's this 2D character who sort of gets access to the third dimension,
right?
But it's still living in the second dimension, but has access to the third dimension in a weird way. So
now here's the weird thing for me, is I like the game, but I don't find myself having that surge of fun, rush, excitement. Oh my God, this is amazing. I don't know why. It's weird. It's like I'm playing it and I'm like, oh, this is...
You're dead inside.
Well, no. I think I've only had limited hands-on with that game from going to certain, you know, indie game events. And I'm definitely excited to try it, but I feel like the amount of hype that's been happening with that game, and then the type of game it is kind of like a slow-paced exploration game. It's not necessarily like this...
It's super chill.
Cool, like, fast-paced action game.
It's the kind of game where you just, you know, sitting in your house wearing a fez.
And you do get those moments of reward when, you know, you get the
chance. When you figure out some of the puzzles, when you figure them out, you're like, oh, that's pretty cool. And the other thing that I do really like is that the death penalty is very low. You just fall and you flop and then you pick back up right where you fell from. So, you know, it's not beating you up. I love that you're not getting beat up, because it is enticing you to fool around with it as much as you want to.
Right, but at least from the limited time I played it, it was more like the response that it gave me was akin to playing a really good puzzle game rather than an adventure game. Because you have these moments of contemplative, like, okay, I mean, everything looks beautiful, but you're like really thinking about how to achieve things. And then when you do, you have a moment of, oh, I finished that. That's great. Like,
that sounds like
I feel rewarded, but you don't necessarily go, okay, I want to break my brain right away again on the next level. You're like, yeah. You might want to take a break. And
but comparatively, since Galaxy came up, Galaxy does give me more of that sort of endorphin, like, ba-bah! I don't know, just like, you know, like, really quick, well, I want to do more of this.
But that's more about the action of, I mean, there are puzzly elements in Galaxy, but it's not all about how do I navigate the environment. Some of it's about that, but some of it's like, I got to contend with enemies and, you know.
Say goodbye to Jeff.
Speaking of contending with enemies, I got to slip out.
Bye.
Cheers. Take care of yourself.
There was a joke there, but I let it go.
I didn't achieve it. I'll see you guys next
week. That's what she said. Right before you slipped out.
Damn it. Bye, Jeff.
Nice.
He did walk right into that.
So, do you want a paper, rock, scissors for the whiskey he left behind?
You take what you want, and then you take what you like, and then we'll go on from there. So that's Fez. And I hope that I find the rest. I think I'll play more of it. It's just, I don't know why I'm complaining, because actually I usually like a game that doesn't make me feel frustrated, because those are, I'm pretty prone to getting frustrated when I'm playing games. And ironically, I'm playing this and I'm just sort of like, and I tell you what, part of it is the music. The music is fucking badass.
Oh, yeah.
The music in this game is really badass.
All the presentational components.
And speaking of music,
great,
Journey soundtrack, by the way, if you did not know this, Journey soundtrack, $5 on PlayStation Network right
hell
now.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, that's
so
happening.
You should do $4.99. You should go do that. Yeah. You should definitely go do that. All right, so what do we want to wrap up on here? I got a couple of things. I'll throw this one out since we're being sort of esoteric.
What, Rock Band Blitz?
Rock Band Blitz, yeah, you want to talk about. Tell me about Rock Band Blitz.
You
were
not
by
sold
this
at all when I was like, I want to talk about Rock Band Blitz.
I'll tell you why.
Okay, tell me why. And then I'll counter.
I loved Amplitude and Frequency.
Huge Frequency fan.
Which were awesome. And the idea of pulling tracks together to complete, or pulling lines, you know, the different phrases together to complete the whole track is really cool. But then it's a Rock Band game. And I don't know, just watching the video, I just wasn't turned on by it.
I feel like with all Rock Band games, you have to be playing to get it.
That's
unless
fair.
You're really into that specific track from that artist. And same with Frequency. Frequency is one of those games that you have to be playing to be feeling like the pacing of the music and to feel the urgency to clear out the note tracks and to switch over to the other track. And now
you have to be in a certain state of mind to really be able to juggle those tracks fast anyway.
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree.
That usually
with you.
Comes right after 420.
But here's the thing about, okay, so there's a lot of things that I really like about it, and there's a couple things that I don't. So let's start with the things that I really like. I really like that it is the familiar kind of Rock Band look, like with the note highway, with the familiar colors, the tracks, like the keyboard, the vocals, the bass, the guitar. And you have a lot of prominent artists that are, that you know and love that are in the game. So those are all positives. Plus you have like the multiplayer, which, Harmonix kind of...
There is multiplayer.
Multiplier.
I thought it was a single player
game. It is a single player game, but the multiplier, when you get so many notes in succession, like you build up the points. And they also have the kind of power-ups that you saw a few of them in Frequency and Amplitude, and they're kind of unique and fun in Rock Band Blitz. They have one that's like a pinball that like goes down the track and like knocks out the notes, and then they have one that is like a second bandmate that you can send down the track that'll play the rest of the notes in that track for you. So they're very similar, just kind of with tweaks. So it was really familiar for me.
Did it feel more like, and I think part of looking at the two button control scheme is that, so obviously this thing doesn't use your plastic instruments.
Right. No plastic instruments. So
game.
Don't feel bad about throwing away that drum set. You did the right thing.
Or if you're Jeff, Kanata took his old gear to the first double jump and was actually giving it away to people like, please take my Rock Band stuff. No, really, please take it.
Otherwise I have to put it in a landfill somewhere.
But I feel like what could be good about this is that it gets back to the real core rhythm based sort of stuff. I mean, like, I remember Beat Hazard and those, like you really, like, there's something just cool about being in the zone with a game and just, and not having to manage like moving notes and all that kind of stuff, just like,
like
getting the rhythm,
tipping your guitar to activate a,
I know it's
muscle,
not hard,
yeah,
but like there's something about just jamming along with the song. So,
and you get to sit down you get to sit on your couch if you're, you know, like me, you don't want
to
stand for hours on end. No, but some of the things that I thought needed a little bit of improvement. And when I was speaking with, you know, some of the guys at Harmonix, they said that they're still making some tweaks to the game. Mm-hmm. It's coming out sometime this summer. And one of the things that I pointed out to them that I said, you know, it's difficult as a fan of these kinds of games and as like a longtime music and rhythm game person, I go, I would like to know when I need to change tracks. Because you can literally just keep playing the same track over and over again. I didn't think the visual cues
to move between line, you know, like,
right.
Oh, now you need to do the vocals. Now you need to do the bass.
Right, because like in frequency, if you remember, once you cleared out the notes of a track, it would clear out, and then you would rotate around the circle and find something else. And in Rock Band Blitz, there was no like defining, oh, you come over here now, come over here and play this track. Oh, wait, come over here. So I said, I think the visual cues need to be a little bit more noticeable, but also it could just be that I wasn't knowing what I was supposed to be looking for.
Wait, but you need to do that. You actually need to, because that was when I first saw the whatever trailer or the announcement, it wasn't clear to me like why you would need to switch lanes. I know they each represented different instruments, but
right,
like,
you have to hit a button to switch lanes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's either the bumpers or the triggers that you can choose to.
Remember, the cool
lanes.
Thing about Freak was that you had to jump between lines and get all of them up to full max to really hear the whole song as it was supposed
exactly.
to be.
Exactly, and that's what made it awesome
so, this
so rewarding.
Do that.
No, at least not what I heard, but I will admit that it was difficult for me to hear the audio on the show floor at PAX East.
Oh,
so, yeah. I mean, I had headphones on, but I would need like a closed door, like, actual gameplay session to give like a full, like, detailed, like, final, like, yes, this is amazing, or no, it needs some work. But just playing it all right, I had a lot of fun with it. I mean, I do miss the EDM because I'm a huge electronic music fan, as you are.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that's what one of the main reasons I really loved Frequency. So, I mean, but they have a good lineup of songs so far that they've announced. It would be really cool if you could import all of your previous Rock Band songs into that game, but I don't think that that's a possibility.
Wait till you see Symphony.
Wait, didn't they say you could do that?
Like, you can't. Oh, yeah, it's all 3,700.
No, not all of them. I think Rock Band 3 you can't import. Are you sure?
It's the full Rock Band library.
Okay, because I thought for sure I saw a story that said that you couldn't do every Rock Band game.
No, you have to have bought them, but everything in the Rock Band store will work with the new Rock Band.
Is there
band
a relicensing
game.
Issue with that? That'd be interesting.
Like, no, what they did say is that the 25 songs that will come with Blitz will play with Rock Band 3.
Yes.
Now, they might not play with Rock Band 2 and 1, but they will play with Rock Band 3. They did say specifically Rock Band 3.
Okay, so. Good. Well, I overall, there was much more I liked about the game than didn't like. Like, I will be playing that game. It was a fun experience. And I'm excited to play more levels and check it out.
I mean, I think it had a great built-in audience. If you've got a bunch of songs that you purchased for Rock Band, you're going to get this.
Do they have a price point for that yet?
It's downloadable of PSN and Xbox.
I guess like 15 to 20 bucks, yeah.
It'll be 15.
Yeah. All right.
All right, folks, you didn't pay anything for this show, but you're going to get free finishing moves right now.
Finishing moves.
Jeff Cannata, you just thought of your... I mean, Jeff Mattis.
Jeff Cannata's not...
He left.
Aww.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. So my finishing move is sort of a two-pronged. I apologize for not having much indie love to bring to the show today, but it's just been because I've been at this event and, you know, it's like... Anyway, I will be picking up Fez and we'll give you more detailed impressions.
We'd love to talk some more about it.
Yeah, so apologies for that. We'll be back on the indie full swing next show.
That's it? That's not two-pronged. That's only single-pronged.
Well, I mean, I'm picking up Fez. Well, the first part was apology. Second part was... Yeah, so
I see. Two
very small prongs.
How's your Yakuza 4 progress going to go?
That is also going to happen.
I'm on to Act 3. I'm playing the policeman now.
Okay, you're ahead of me. I'm still on two.
Get going.
Yep.
Get going, because
we
got to talk about this.
Word.
Three people who listen want us to know.
Yeah, definitely. We will not disappoint.
Well, speaking of indie games...
Yes, ma'am. Your finishing move...
I saw Indie Game the movie, and you should too. I've seen many, many documentaries in my lifetime, and this is a very fantastic documentary. It was really well done, really engaging storylines. They're taking it around the country and screening it right now. If you go to indiegamethemovie.com, you can find out if it's coming to a city near you. It will be going digital, I believe, in June, where you can buy a digital copy of it. I don't know when or if they're going to do hard copies, but I believe they will. But I know that they said that the director said digital early summer. So, but and really fantastic movie.
And that chronicles the making of Fez, Super Meat Boy,
and Braid.
Braid.
Yes. Well, they don't really chronicle the making of Braid, but they speak with him about, you know, his experiences. But it's really heartwarming to, like, listen to these guys and see their struggles and know that, like, they paid off, particularly with the Team Meat story. Like,
yeah.
Just, like, seeing, like, all the things that they went through and kind of, like, this undue pressure they put on themselves. And hearing them get so excited about selling 10,000 copies when in your mind you know they go on to sell, like, over a million copies of the game. It's really great. You guys really should see it.
A heartwarming classic for the ages.
You'll laugh, you'll cry.
Totally on my list. I'm disappointed I haven't seen it yet.
And also what should be on your list if you are a PlayStation owner would be Legend of Dragoon. If you missed it 11 years ago and you're a role-playing game fan, as many people may have, you might have attributed it to being just a Final Fantasy clone. However, it was not. It is awesome. It has a really cool combat mechanic that will keep you engaged in... And I'll just say that it has a very cool timing mechanic that has not been repeated oftentimes in a turn-based combat system that I thought was really good.
Yeah, well worth checking out.
And well worth checking out. And also, Persona 3 FES is also available on PlayStation Network. So there you go.
Pretty
great
awesome.
Classic role-playing games available for your PS3. I say that now and I'm thinking, well, that does sound a little silly, but they're great games.
No,
seriously,
it was funny because you were like, in case you missed it 11 years ago.
they are awesome games. Seriously, they're awesome games. You should check them out. And on that note, we will draw this to a close. Thank you very much to Andrea Renee from Machinima for dropping any new shows or anything you'd like to point them to watch on your YouTube channel.
We have a lot of cool stuff going on in Machinima all the time. We have Bite Me going right now. We launched a new series on our main channel called Bro Team, which is really funny. No, trust me. It's
parental advisory on Bro Team, but if you can handle it, it's awesome.
Yeah, they're super funny.
Bro Team!
And it's actually just one guy, just so you know. He makes it sound like it's multiple, but it's just one dude. He's great.
I kind of love him, but it's kind of, if you hear it, you'll be like, oh, figures.
Yeah, right. And we have... Save Point, which is a new video documentary series that we've been running with, which is the history of Machinima Respawn. If you guys are Respawn fans and you like Sark and Hutch and Danners and all those guys, it kind of chronicles that where they came from and how the channel started. It's kind of cool.
Sweet.
So, yeah.
Indie Jeff, anything you want to plug before you get out of here? Since I mean, you work for us. You might as well plug something.
Sure. Well, I'll just plug the awesome weekend that I hope everyone has. How's that?
All right.
That's all I got.
Hey, thanks to Micah Atlantis Studio Group, of course, as always. Great job in the booth. Thank you to Del Rio. Thank you to Fireball Whiskey for fueling this episode. Hope you will start, if you have not already, watching the daily show that is driving me nuts getting done every day.
Shaq News Daily.
It's a challenge. But we're doing a video show. It's available through the app on Shaq News and also on YouTube on the Shaq News channel. And I don't know. That's it. Just do all those things. Make us all happy. That's your weekend confirmed. Until next week, we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. Body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.